Good evening, everyone. Meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have the minutes of March 29th before us. Representative Carlson moves approval. Any corrections, additions, changes to the minutes of March 29th? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we have two items of business tonight. I know it's late, but we'll try to move as expeditiously but also as respectfully as possible. One item we've got is an item on the budget resolution that we talked about some last night regarding the MinCorps account. The chair will move the A11 amendment, which basically limits spending in the MinCorps account to the additional $2 million that's in the bill. I appreciate Representative Hillstrom bringing to our attention some issues about this account last night. I did check after she mentioned it, and we do have notwithstanding language in the bill regarding the account, and so the issues as to state law that she raised have, from the standpoint of the bill, been taken care of. And I also checked with Mr. Marks on the amount of money available to spend in the account, and I guess if I can ask Mr. Marks to talk about the balance in the account and what is available to spend.
Mr. Chair, members, and this information would be from the Department of Corrections budget information with the budget pages. It's on page 6, but the account, as Corrections presented it, is currently projected to end June 30th, 2019 with a $2,182,000 balance. This resolution would allow up to $2 million of that amount to be spent or to be transferred out in the case that's being done in the bill. So basically, the resolution is attempting, the number in the resolution holds the account on the positive side at this point as well.
Discussion on that issue, Representative Carlson.
Chairman, so then in 19, there would be $182,000 left in the account.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, the projection is $2,182,000. The bill takes $2 million of that, transferring it to the general fund. So, yes.
Chairman,
of the yes.
$182,000. I don't know a whole lot about that account.
Could you use your microphone, Representative Carlson?
I say I don't know a whole lot about the purposes of that account, but I have no idea what that $182,000 means in terms of bringing it down, what appears to be that low, but I don't know how we'd find out tonight. It's late, but it looks like a relatively low balance.
Well, Representative Carlson, I guess if we get to it, then, I mean, it shows that that money is available. I guess if it gets to conference committee and we find out more that there is a problem with that, I certainly expect that can be dealt with.
And from my perspective, it may or may not be. I just don't know a lot about what the account, quite frankly, is used for.
Sure.
Typically. Thank you.
Okay. All right. And I also did check, and it's my understanding that since 2014, we actually have been out of compliance on this particular account. And so it may make sense for us to actually look at revising the law on it. And there's some other issues relating to that. But anyway, the money is there. It's available. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the A11 amendment to the budget resolution, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. Motion prevails. The A11 amendment to the budget resolution is adopted. Okay, next, members, we've got the higher ed bill. And the chair will move Senate file 2214. And then move that House File 2477, or the language of House File 2477, be inserted into Senate File 2214 as a delete all. And this is merely a procedural amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The delete all is now in and comprises Senate File 2214. Representative Nornes, please present your bill.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening. We hope to make this painless and quick, but thorough. Right? With a little cooperation. Again, I'll just give you the financial part of this. First, we had a budget target of $139,499,000, and we met that target number. Dividing it out, the Office of Higher Education has $34,650,000. Minnesota State Minscu has a total of $92 million, and the University of Minnesota $22 million. And that should total to $149,499. And it does balance as far as the target is concerned. A couple of things highlighting the Office of Higher Education, a couple of things in that is continuing some spinal cord research. Ag educator loan forgiveness is in there. It's a poppy provision. Large animal veterinary loan forgiveness. Teacher candidate of color financial aid program. And some changes to the state grant itself. Student loan debt counseling is another part under the Office of Higher Education. Under the Minnesota State provisions, things to note there probably is $10 million designed for technology. They have a very outdated computer system. The Workforce Development Scholarships total about $2.5 million. The Cook County Higher Education Board is a total of $280,000. And general operating and tuition freeze for Minnesota State totals $77 million. For the University of Minnesota, the National Resources Research Institute is funded. That's about $4 million. Health training is $14 million. Men Drive is $2 million. The build program is $500,000, and the campus at University of Minnesota Morris is $1.5 million, and that's the backfill. A program they have, they've had it for a long time. It's a treaty that goes back to the beginning of that college, where American Indians can go for zero tuition. They go without paying tuition. So this backfills that tuition that they're not collecting from those students. So that's kind of a quick rundown of those three areas that we are responsible for. And maybe at this time there are several amendments.
Okay, well, let's go to the amendments. Members, first of all, I want to tell you that to the best of my knowledge, the A1 and A3 amendments are not going to be offered. Some parts of them are incorporated, however, into another author's amendment, the A4 amendment. Representative Nornes moves the A4 amendment. Representative Nornes.
I didn't pick up my amendment, so here we go. Okay. Mr. Chair, it has been brought to my attention that on line 1.8, where it's referring to a misdemeanor, there's been a question of whether that is too restrictive. I think I'd like to get some feedback on that.
Okay. And that's language that I had worked on, Representative Nornes. And I guess what this is about is there's language in the bill that basically mandates that a college or university accept anyone from Minnesota who applies who is in the top 10% of their graduating class. And I felt that instead of having an absolute hard mandate that they accept anyone, if you have an applicant who's got some sort of a criminal record that they ought to have or is under indictment for something, that the college or university ought to have the option of not accepting that person. This doesn't say they can't accept the person. It just doesn't say they have to accept the person. And so the language, I debated a little bit about whether the word misdemeanor should be in there or not. Some misdemeanors are pretty minor. Some are perhaps not as minor. But this is, if a student has committed a misdemeanor, a university or college could still certainly accept them. They just wouldn't be obligated to accept them. And that was the philosophy behind that. Representative Hillstrom.
Yeah, Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, I have spoken with Representative Cornish. I want members to know some things that are considered misdemeanors under Minnesota law. Operating an ATV without a helmet if you're under 18, that would be a misdemeanor. Minor consumption would be a misdemeanor. It would also be a misdemeanor if you operated a motorboat without a flotation device. It is a misdemeanor if you operate a snowmobile without the proper registration on you. So members, even folks who are just participating in everyday DNR kinds of activities, fishing without a license, would now keep you from automatic admission to college, even if you are in the top 10% of your class.
Representative Cornish? And I want to say, members, I don't have strong feelings on this, but again, this is not, I feel like we should have something in here that says that a college doesn't have to accept a student if they have some sort of a criminal record. So you are right, Representative Hillstrom, some misdemeanors are very minor, some aren't as minor. But anyway, a college can still accept the person with a misdemeanor, it's just they wouldn't have to. Representative Hillstrom.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, but you're not requiring that they be convicted of anything. You say even if they're charged. So you might have received a ticket and not even have had your opportunity to appear in court yet. And if you've been, you phrase it as under indictment for a misdemeanor. We usually say, you know, charged. But so even just getting a ticket of fishing without a license could keep you from being automatically admitting to
that. And I didn't say petty misdemeanor, but I mean,
they're misdemeanors, Mr. Chair.
But I have, I guess, Representative Cornish, let me recognize you.
Well, I guess
I don't have strong feelings about the misdemeanor language, members.
Brought it to me, but personally, I would probably strike under indictment and say leave conviction and misdemeanor, so you'd be left with convicted of a gross or a felony. Because even a gross, you could be shooting deer out of season and mm-hmm. could be a gross. You know, up to you folks, but.
Representative Fabian.
Yeah, I concur with Representative Hines. I think that I realize that it is.
I won't say who. I just think this is too harsh. So
okay. And again,
I don't think I could have gotten into college.
I don't have strong.
Whoa!
I'm kidding.
Whoa! If I can do
Karen
it,
Karen Ornest, what's your view of it?
I would like to offer an oral amendment to make those corrections if that's the wishes.
Okay. So, state your oral amendment.
Well, I think Fabian's suggestion was probably the best. Who could repeat that for me?
But Jim Cornish is I'm from
Mr. Chairman. We're going to strike convict or strike under indictment, leave convicted, and then leave gross misdemeanor and felony. And that's however they think that should be worded. Research of all these. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess I would say after the word of on page 1, line 7, delete the comma. And page 1, line 8, delete the language, or is under indictment for, comma, a misdemeanor, comma, and then just leave in the words gross misdemeanor or felony. Is that correct, Mr. Sullivan? We'd have to insert the word A after the word of, so convicted of a gross misdemeanor or felony.
Correct, Mr. Chair. On page 1, line 7, as you said, you can delete the comma at the end of that sentence. You can keep the A on 1.8 by deleting or is under indictment for, comma, leave the A and delete misdemeanor, comma, so it would read, admission under this section is not required if the applicant has been convicted of a gross misdemeanor or felony.
All right. Okay, Chair Nornes incorporates that change into the A4 amendment. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, it's hard for me to hear what Representative Cornish was saying, but is indictment out? Because I had
indictment is out
totally for even for a more serious offense. Because as a former social studies teacher, we used to teach about the courts and the grand jury, and a person that's indicted isn't necessarily convicted of a crime, and that's a world of difference under our laws, so sure. I'm pleased that that's out. That makes it much better than
all right. Other discussion to the A4 amendment. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I see where you're going here, but I wonder if there wouldn't be, well, a couple things. One, if this shouldn't still, if this kind of provision wouldn't send the bill to public safety, because I wonder if there is any kind of fiscal impact from this. You know, as a defense lawyer, whenever we add these collateral consequences, it changes the way most cases are settled with a plea. And the attorney is advising the person of what they may be losing besides the obvious sentence. And, I don't know, but I think that you may have an impact from this having to do with, when somebody decides to take a plea versus go to trial, they're making a calculation about how much is at stake. And here we're talking, I think, only about students who are in the top 10% of their class, if I'm not mistaken, right, that this would even affect. And so we're talking about students who have a bright future ahead of them, who now you'd have somebody who's charged with a gross misdemeanor, say, blocking a highway. If it was to become a gross misdemeanor.
No, shooting gear.
And, or any other thing. I think was Representative Cornish who said it could be shooting a deer, could be out of season, could be a gross misdemeanor. So then when you're giving that student advice, you're talking about a student who has a very bright future ahead of them, and this could be a significant consequence to that student. So I'm just saying that there's maybe more involved here than meets the eye, because you're creating a right for students in Minnesota, I think, with this issue about top 10 and you can get into college and it's the automatic acceptance, and then you're creating a potential collateral consequence to a gross misdemeanor or a felony.
Yeah. And I'll recognize Representative Cornish in a minute, but I guess the flip side of it is if you have a student that would be in the top 10% and qualify, and they had just been convicted of criminal sexual conduct, which is in some cases a gross misdemeanor, do you want to require that the college accept them for admission? Now, the college still can accept them for admission. This simply says the college has the choice of saying they don't have to accept them for admission. And I think that we should give the colleges and universities some discretion in such cases.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not disputing in a case like that, certainly. I'm just saying that before you get convicted of your gross misdemeanor or felony, there's a whole process involved in which you're getting advice from an attorney and thinking through whether you want to take your case to trial or take a plea on it. And the more collateral consequences we pile on to things, and I get that you're creating a, because in the bill you're creating a right that wasn't even there before at all. This is a whole new thing that you're creating, and that there may be students for whom, you know, maybe somebody would have taken a plea to shooting a deer out of season. But now that it's going to be a gross misdemeanor, and it may then possibly mean they don't get into their college of their choice, which would have been guaranteed otherwise, it may be a consideration that they take it to trial. So I'm not saying that, I'm not disputing your whole idea that there should be some exceptions if you're going to have the automatic acceptance. I hear where you're coming from. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just pointing out that there may be a little more to the way you're doing it here than might meet the eye.
Chair Cornish.
Mr. Chair, members, there's two things that would send to my committee, either policy or finance. So it doesn't commit a new crime, or doesn't create a new crime, and after looking at enough fiscal notes over the last few years, I can't even see how you would stretch this to a fiscal note. We've had things that a lot more implication. This didn't bring any fiscal costs, and it's optional, and the chance of it ever happening are slim, so I think it would be a zero fiscal note.
Other discussion to the A4 amendment?
Mr. Chair, if you'd like.
Yeah, Representative Norris.
There are a few other changes that we could highlight very quickly if Mr. Williams would be willing to do that.
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Sean Williams from House Research. So the first couple of changes in there relate to the performance metrics. from Minnesota State. It reduces sort of the number of percentage points by which those metrics must increase under the bill. The next change is a technical change related to the provision in the bill having to do with consultant reports. It just states that a public post-secondary institution, either Minnesota State or the University of Minnesota, must report to the legislature about consultant report or consultants that were paid more than $500,000 in the previous biennium.
Report.
The next two changes relate to the automatic admission section. There's first the change we've been discussing related to criminal gross misdemeanors or felonies. There's an additional change that sort of rewords an existing provision in the bill related to requiring that the scholarship dollars awarded to institutions admitted because they're in the top 10% of their high school class must exceed the amount of scholarship dollars received by non-resident students. And then there's two clarifying changes in the end related to some language that appeared to be duplicated in the first endorsement of the bill. And this just clarifies that the duplicated language only applies to the section in which the subdivisions appear.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Williams. Other discussion of the A4 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A4 amendment as modified, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A4 amendment is adopted. Okay, members, next we've got the A2 amendment. The chair will offer the A2 amendment. Members, this is, first of all, session law language, but there's been some discussion about the, you know, off and on for years about the central office that Minnesota State, Minsku has. With the shrinking enrollment in some of the campuses, I think we should look at seeing when their lease runs out, and it doesn't run out until 2022 or so, if there are options for them to relocate on campus somewhere as opposed to renewing their current lease. And so this would only be session law for the next 2 years, but it would require them to explore that possibility. Discussion of the A2 amendment. Representative Pulowski.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm intrigued by this amendment. Also by your statement dealing with session law, because when another chair chaired higher ed in 97-98, he had a stipulation in session law, too, that all administrators had to teach one course during an academic school year, starting with the college president and the chancellor all the way down. Now, your amendment would facilitate such an addition, that they would be on campus, and then they would be able to use their educational skills with students in a campus setting. I don't want to offer any type of an amendment today, but I think if we're going to look at this over the next couple of years, it would really mean that we would have administrators in touch with students, faculty, the communities that these campuses represent. So, and perhaps session law, maybe statutory law would be a place to eventually look at this, Mr. Chair. But I'm very intrigued by this amendment.
Well, thank you, Representative Pulowski. I offer it really for two reasons. One is I think there is the potential for some fiscal savings here if they leave the current office space that they're in and move to a campus where we own the space. But beyond that, perhaps of even greater advantage would be the co-location or relocation of the administrators onto a campus where they would interact with students and faculty more often and perhaps in doing so be able to better do their jobs. As to whether it should be statutory law or session law, I guess I'll let the conference committee figure that out, given the will of this committee. Other discussion, Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, actually I raised this question many years ago when we were building Metro State. I thought it might be a target of opportunity. The chancellor at the time resisted that. He felt anything that he might do that would benefit Metro State, the other colleges and universities would think that favoritism due to location was taking place. But kind of along that line, just to kind of give a bit of a heads up, for many years I chaired the Education Division of Appropriations, as we called it then, and especially the Duluth delegation. They were always upset that Morrill Hall was located on the Twin Cities campus, and they felt that there was favoritism, the very thing that I think it was Chancellor Carruthers that I was dealing with at the time with the state university system. So to just give you a heads up, there are different schools of thought within the systems as to that question. Now, Morrill Hall was never moved, but Representative Mike Yaros used to always point out that there was a report that was done by some entity that recommended the movement of Morrill Hall from the Twin Cities campus. And he chaired the Higher Ed Policy Committee, and then he'd send it over to Appropriations, and I guess we just can't let it stay there. At any rate, it can generate a pretty lively discussion within the higher education community.
Yeah, Representative Carlson, there are obviously pros and cons to it, and I guess that was one reason I was suggesting it be in session law as opposed to putting it into a statute so that it wasn't as permanent as it would otherwise be.
I just wanted to point out, Mr. Chairman, I've been there and done that.
All right. Well, we appreciate your wisdom.
I really thought it was a tangible opportunity with Metro because it was going to be built.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if you mentioned the lease still the current lease has a little time on it yet, so this is not something that would happen overnight.
Yes, Chair Norris, the current lease, I understand, expires in like 2022 or 23, something like that, and so it is a while till it expires, although, you know, sometimes people renew leases early, but this would prevent a new lease from being signed in the next 2 years and would cause this study to be
done. I'm not sure how many employees are there, but, you know, the basement of this building is available.
Yes. And the first floor. Other discussion. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just had a question of the way it's written. If this would preclude the central office from actually splitting into multiple campuses and splitting some of the office staff who do specific duties, and just because in my mind that might be an appealing way of handling how to handle the central office.
Well, Representative Poppy, the way it's written right now, it would appear that it would say it would have to be located at one other campus, but I guess I wouldn't object to modifying it if the committee seemed to want to say we could add the word or campuses at the end of line 7.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure what exactly the right amendment would be at this point, but
all right,
Mr. Sullivan comment. Would have something.
Mr. Chair and Representative Poppy, I think the Chair's recommendation is good. This would allow MnDOT to explore co-locating a central office on an existing system campus or campuses. That would be accomplished by, on page 1, line 7 of the A2 amendment, before the period, insert the words, or campuses.
All right, I'll incorporate that into my amendment. Other discussion to the A2 amendment? Representative Plowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy's addition adds another interesting twist to this, because the central office will go to Mankato State for printing. It'll go to Winona State for technology. I think this starts to solve a whole host of problems here. We can park those administrators that are responsible for those activities at the places that they've actually gone to get the service in the first place. This becomes better and better as we begin to take a look at it, Mr. Chair.
Well, I appreciate people's suggestions in improving it. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to add to that, it would also perhaps mean that the local campuses wouldn't need to provide money to the central office in exchange for some of the services that they've been providing.
Other discussion to the A2 amendment, just as amended. All right. All in favor of the A2 amendment as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A2 amendment as amended is adopted. Okay, members, the final amendment of which I am aware is the A6 amendment. And members, this amendment you have seen before if you were on this committee last year. It deals with fetal tissue research at the University of Minnesota. People were on the committee last year, which is almost everyone. Heard about this issue last year. There were some concerns about how the university was handling fetal tissue research. They have made some changes, some positive changes since then, but I personally think that there are still some things to be done. This particular amendment is identical to the language we had last year. At the time last year, people may recall that the university said they did not object to this language. I have talked to them, and they have told me that they object to it this year. I know that they are in discussions with other members about possible alternatives to this language, but I guess I would like to get something put into the bill on it so that discussions can continue. And being it was not seemingly, well, being we all voted for the same identical language, being the committee adopted the same identical language last year and people have seen it, and I feel it still addresses the same issues that we dealt with last year in terms of saying if there is fetal tissue research going on, it needs to be reviewed by an institutional review board, which is pretty much standard practice in a lot of the medical community. In fact, almost all the medical community, when you're doing a new research report, that the university would see if there are other sources for tissue besides aborted tissue, that they would give us a report. The one thing that's been modified is on page 1, line 18, the date 2018 was 2017 last year, that the Board of Regents adopt some board oversight activities, and that the legislative auditor is requested to do a review of research activities, but of course not mandated. And so, members, I would appreciate your support on the amendment, and I'm open for questions and discussion. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is, I think, important to note that we're a new legislature after the election, and so that wasn't on this committee last year, although we did take up this issue in the Health and Human Services Committee, and it was quite a vigorous and difficult debate. I'm wondering, Mr. Chair, if you would allow the folks from the University of Minnesota to come and testify about their objections. I would like to understand where they are on this issue. I understand the language is similar to what was heard last year, but it's a new year. They've probably done some work. I'd like to hear it.
Sure. No, that's fine, Representative Murphy. I talked to them ahead of time, and I had told them that if someone wanted to ask them to come forward, I'd certainly recognize them. So if Ms. Gill could come forward. Ms. Keel, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy, why don't you repeat your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good evening, Ms. Keel. I am wondering if you can share with us the position on this amendment, the university's position, please.
Sure. For the record, Mr. Chair and committee members, Christine Keel, University of Minnesota Government Relations and Community Relations. The university is opposed, as this is currently written, over the interim, we implemented some new policies, and we also implemented a fetal tissue research committee that deals only and directly with fetal tissue research, and so we feel we've made good policy changes that go beyond this, and that's our main objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Keel. Is there anything else you want to add?
We would not, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would also not presume to tell the legislative auditor what to do.
All right.
Well, and members, again, on the legislative auditor, it's a request. It's not requiring them.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
So as I mentioned, when we heard this issue, we had a very contentious debate in Health and Human Services, and I am certain that the Health and Human Services Committee and members of that committee would want to see this again. This is the Ways and Means Committee. I don't see that there's any fiscal note attached to this or any. We don't know what it's going to cost. We don't know if it's going to have a cost. I don't think that we should be debating in the Ways and Means Committee the content of this amendment. I think this belongs in the Higher Education Committee, and it belongs in the Health and Human Services Committee. Even if it was heard last session, this is a new legislature, and it should go through the process. I think this is a significant policy. It's asking the University of Minnesota to do significant new jobs. We haven't had it heard. We don't really know what the university is doing. I don't know what she's describing other than brief testimony. And this is significant for the university, for the research part of the university, for our frontward-facing research image. And while I understand it is important to you, I think at 10:10 on a Thursday night, having not had a chance to look at this at all, other than it was recently posted, I think it is too big a bite for this committee at this time. And Representative Nornes, I think it makes your bill, even it's going to make your bill a difficult bill. And so I really don't think the committee should take this on tonight. I think we should let this lie. If you want to proceed with the issue, there's plenty of ways that you can do it, Mr. Chair. You've got lots of power. But it shouldn't go into this bill, not now.
Well, Representative Murphy, let me just respond by saying, I mean, this is not a health and human services issue. This is a higher ed issue. That's why it deals with higher ed. That's why it's here in the higher ed committee.
Mr. Chair, I will respectfully disagree with you. This is about science. It is about human health. It is about human science. The research that's being done at the university is about human health and human science. It has an impact on those things, as well as the research mission of our University of Minnesota. It impacts both those things, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Murphy, if you do read through the amendment, you'll see there's nothing in here that prohibits the university from actually doing fetal tissue research. Representative Wheeling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wonder whether, if this goes on the bill, whether it makes abortion amendments germane to this bill. And I can pretty much guarantee you that, well, let me not say it that way. It may be that if this is in the bill, that it will attract amendments dealing with abortion on, you know, perhaps on both sides. And the debate over the higher ed bill could become a debate over abortion. And I don't know if that's something that you or Representative Nornes would really welcome. But I do agree with Representative Murphy. I think this is a health and human services issue. If it wasn't, I don't know why we had a long debate on it in the last term in the Health and Human Service Committees, which we did. You know, it is one of those. There are many issues, of course, like this that kind of cross over that often get heard in both places. But anyway, I just wanted to flag that issue for you as well.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, on the process, when Lee Greenfield chaired the Health and Human Services Finance Committee of Appropriations, because of the research at the university, there were times when there was healthcare-related issues that would be part of the university specials. And we were always careful that Representative Greenfield would hear prior to our inserting any language dealing with that kind of research, and generally wasn't controversial as this may be, but we just have that understanding that we respected the role of the two committees. And he would generally hear that article of the bill, and sometimes we would do it formally with referral, but because it was all within the Appropriations Committee, sometimes we could do it informally where they would hear the article that was relevant for them, and then if they had any suggested changes or if they wanted to give a blessing to the language, that would take place. But the point is, we did engage the Health and Human Services people on health-related research issues. The other thing I was going to mention, and I think I raised this when it was before us before, but sprinkled through the language is again the word must, and when you're dealing with must and shall with the University of Minnesota, you know, they're constitutionally autonomous, and we were generally always careful to request the university to do this or that. And especially within the second paragraph there, there's a couple of musts in the first paragraph. But you're really giving clear direction to the university that they must do certain things. And that language, I don't think, really belongs in the amendment. I think it should be rewritten at some point where it would say request.
Representative Postman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I heard the testifier say is they opposed it because they did work in this past year as a result of the what the legislature said the last time around, and that you feel you've actually gone beyond this already. What, of course, would have been helpful if this had come up earlier in the higher ed committee or wherever, and then the university could have said, here's all the work we did, here's our report, and how we have moved beyond that. But we really aren't in a position this evening to even have that discussion. So that's the regrettable part of the timing of this, I think.
Well, members, I guess I would say, I mean, in regard to Representative Carlson, certainly if the university wished to exercise their constitutional powers, they could do so. You know, I appreciate talking to Ms. Keel earlier today and getting some information from her. Ms. Keel, I guess if I can ask you, the Board of Regents hasn't actually passed any resolutions on this or policies themselves, have they?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Board of Regents have not, but we have administrative policies on the use of fetal tissue research or fetal tissue in our research.
Okay. So then I guess the reason I ask is, I guess, kind of going backwards through the bill, I mean, the last section about the legislative auditor is simply a request for the legislative auditor to do some things. If you go to page 2 of the amendment, line 16, we're asking the Board of Regents to develop some policies and affirm them, and the Board of Regents hasn't done that yet underneath anything that's been done in the last year. If you go to the bottom of page 1, subdivision 3, the legislative report, this is simply asking for a report on a number of issues, and perhaps some of them are including some of the things that the university has done in the last year, but it would be useful to then have that report. Subdivision 2 is a request, essentially, that the dean of the university's medical school shall attempt to identify sources of fetal tissue that are available outside of aborted tissue. So there's really not a requirement here, just a request that the dean see if they can find some tissue that would meet those requirements, and if they can in fact do that, report on that. And finally, if you go to subdivision 1 on page 1, line 4, I know from talking previously and even from talking today that some of these studies are routed through an institutional review board. I know that that's very standard procedure when you're doing a scientific study to get an institutional review board to look at the study ahead of time and just consider, you know, maybe in a case like this, well, does human tissue need to be used or could animal tissue be used? And, I mean, how much tissue is needed? And to ask questions of the researchers to verify that what is being done ethically and being done in other ways that meet scientific standards. And I know the university is already doing this on many, many other projects, and in fact on some fetal tissue projects, so requesting that they simply do it on all of them doesn't seem unreasonable to me. And that is what the amendment is. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, you know, your comment about you didn't know if they would exercise their constitutional autonomy, the point I want to make is that the legislature historically has always tried to respect that. So my point is more from our side, if the language goes through, they'll have to make that decision. I don't know if they would or not, but I think it's important that we respect the Constitution and their autonomy. That's the point I would like to make.
Okay. Well, and then, members, if this is, in fact, adopted, we can certainly have that issue of language worked on. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A6 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. The A6 amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments on the bill of which I'm unaware? Okay, discussion two of the bill. Representative Hillstrom and then Pulowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, I will have an amendment on the floor. I just didn't have it prepared. I was working on another bill, and so I didn't get it prepared for tonight's meeting. But on page 45 of the bill, members, there is a provision that permits a private institution who has been adjudicated of fraud or misrepresentation to keep their license. Members, under current law, the office shall not provide registration or degree or name approval for a school if there has been criminal, civil, or administrative adjudication of fraud or misrepresentation. Members, the state of Minnesota, the Attorney General sued two for-profit institutions, and a court found that they committed fraud. The court adjudicated that they had committed fraud. They committed fraud by claiming their criminal justice program would allow folks to become probation officers and law enforcement officers when, in fact, you were not even eligible to sit for the test to be a law enforcement officer. The colleges were found that they had used a large number of veterans using the GI benefits enrolled in the school's criminal justice program, only to later discover that their degree failed to meet the requirements to become police officers or probation officers. It was found that that 1,239 students were affected by this fraud, and in fact, the court ordered a restitution to be paid to them. Members, the language change would say only that the state may revoke or deny application. This is after it has been found by a court of law that they committed fraud. So I will be bringing an amendment to delete this provision. I don't believe that the state should permit people who have committed fraud of our students to teach students anymore. So I think it should come out of the bill, and I wish that the author of the bill would take it out on his own so I don't have to.
Representative Norris, do you want to respond at all?
I think the author put it in the bill, so I think that's the disagreement we'll have. So.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, we heard from the Commissioner of Education on the K-12 bill. Could we hear briefly from the Governor's office on this bill? I think Commissioner Pogemiller is here, so he could just go over the highlights or lowlights, whichever.
It's all highlights, isn't it? That's what you said.
Welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means, Commissioner Pogemiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I know it's late. I'll be brief. I believe a copy of the letter that I sent to the chairs is in your packet, and I'll just hit the highlights. At a time of relative prosperity, the governor believes we should invest $318 million in post-secondary education. The governor's impressed that the bill does show that there's a recognition that Minnesota State needs to upgrade their internal computer systems, their integrated computer systems, and that the university needs to invest in NRRI, and the bill fully funds the health training restoration, which is important to healthcare training around the state. Unfortunately, the bill, as structured, provides only 47% of what the governor has recommended as an investment. And the lack of investment in operating funds to public institutions, combined with tuition freezes in the bill, or tuition freeze in the bill, I believe the university has not requested to freeze, that there'll be a degradation of quality because of some layoffs and diminished course offerings. The smaller investment in need-based aid will likely lead to higher debt for students who could least afford that debt. The bill is $56.4 million, 37% less investment to Minnesota State Colleges, Minnesota State, $74 million, or 75% less, to the University of Minnesota for students and research, and $36 million, or 58% less in need-based aid. And finally, I wanted to reiterate, the governor has asked me to reiterate, his letter that he sent to the leadership, to the speaker and the majority leader, that he strongly opposes policy language in the budget bills that are not directly related to the budget. And his thinking along that is it's going to make it difficult to, at the end of the legislative session, to conferee these bills in a way that the governor will be able to sign them. And he simply requests, because he thinks it would be more efficient, if you would take the policy provisions and pass them in a separate policy bill. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to comment. And I do want to say publicly again that Chair Nornis and his staff are just a joy to work with, and my staff and myself really appreciate working with them.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Pogemiller. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, do you have a position on the private institutions that have been adjudicated of fraud or misrepresentation? Do you believe that that should be in the bill, or would you like to see that out?
Commissioner Pogemiller.
Ms. Chairman, or the governor's position is that that provision should not be in the bill. And I believe the governor's position is that it will lead to more litigation as written, and that he would oppose that.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Commissioner Pogemiller? Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, Representative Carlson?
No, I thought you was done. I was going to ask.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I've been very interested in the tuition issue, and I found out literally tonight that the question about what the tuition impact would be of this funding level, or the impact on tuition, and that the systems, or at least the conversation I had, the U of M, but probably Minnesota State as well, have not been willing to tell the previous committee what those tuition increases might be. And, you know, I hate to live in the past, so to speak, but I did chair the committee that dealt with one education committee or another for about 20 years. And before a bill was passed, we would always get information from the systems then, because we had most of that time predated Minnesota State, what the funding level impact was going to be on tuition. And that was always provided. It was a fellow named Dave Berg. I still remember him well. He would come forward and he would testify as to, as the bill was leaving the House, what the tuition level was going to be. We would ask that same question in conference committee because the numbers would change. And they would share that with us in terms of what the expectation was from the standpoint of the legislature, what that funding level was going to be. And I would simply request that as this bill moves forward, that both of those systems look at the funding level and share with members of the legislature, after all, we do have the purse strings, mm-hmm. what the tuition impact is going to be. It's something they used to do. It's something they still can do. And I understand they say, well, they can't because the Board of Regents has to act on it. Well, I know full well it's the administration that recommends the tuition level to the Board of Regents. And yes, the Board of Regents might change that, but what we're talking about is what that recommendation would be, and I would guess if we looked at it historically that the vast majority of the time the administration's recommendations are in fact what the Board of Regents realistically adopts. So I don't know if others feel that way, but it was something that I historically felt very strongly about, because I've always been concerned about the cost of attendance. And by the way, we also have to understand tuition is just one component of the cost of attendance. We should really be talking most of the time about the whole package. So I'm sorry that I had to vent there a little bit, but it's something that they can do, should do, and it should be required of them.
When I represent Carlson, we did have some discussions with this. You may remember when we had a hearing on higher ed in this committee some time ago in terms of, you know, what the tuition increase might be projected to be at different levels. And I don't really recall what that was based on what was in Representative Norris's bill. But I never have any objection to any member of the public or employee of the state or other state agency sharing information with members. And if they would wish to do that, I would certainly welcome their input.
And Mr. Chair, just one final comment, because I am quite concerned about that. From my perspective, speaking for myself, they're hearing from one of the strongest advocates historically for a generation for higher education, and I would like and need that information.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Representative Norris.
I was just going to add that the committee did hear from both systems, but before the targets were set, it was only in general terms. And so until that was done, we, you know, the university had given us a range of what they may have for tuition increases. We also allow a tuition increase for the 4 years, the first year, so it's not a total freeze. And so we've tried to work with the system as much as we can. And I can assure you the committee and my bill hopefully will do no harm. We want to work with the system to make sure it's as efficient as possible. and as painless for the students as possible. That's still the goal.
No.
And so we will now probably get more specific information from both as to what this means as far as tuition goes.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, that was my point, that when the bills were basically at this point in time, or when they would have left the equivalent of your committee now, we would have the numbers and we would get that response, and they were very clear about what they would need to do. And that's all I'm saying. And then the next time the numbers change are in conference committee, and we would literally have the systems up at the table, and they would tell us before we wrapped up the bill in conference committee what the tuition recommendations were going to be. And that's all I'm requesting, and I'm of the understanding, if I'm correct, that hasn't been shared in any detail yet.
I have Representative Poppy and Pulaski. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, it's on page 25, the automatic admission. I just wanted to ask a question about that. I guess I appreciate that there's guaranteed admission for students, but I just had maybe some comments about a couple of pieces of that. One would be that you're talking about students that are in public or private schools, nothing about homeschooled students, so I didn't know if you had an intention of not having homeschooled students as a part of that. The GPA, or the grade point average, is that for students to be in the top 10%, we have quite a variation on class sizes, graduating class sizes, so some students might have a lower grade point average and be from a small school, and as opposed to somebody from a larger school who might not meet that 10% range. And then the other comment would be on the baccalaureate program, being a specific program, so that I'm wondering if the intention is to allow a student to be able to be accepted into a college or university, or if you really are intending them to be able to be admitted to a baccalaureate program that might be a specific program that might have additional admission requirements. So I don't have an amendment for that, but I think those are some comments that I would make just about that particular section, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nordis, did you want to respond to that at all?
Only that that's a new provision, and probably there's some things that we need to further discuss. You know, homeschool students, I think, technically graduate from whatever school district they happen to be in. I think the school district has to sign off on their diploma.
Not necessarily.
But it still wouldn't apply in this case as far as being admitted, because they would have a ranking. They hopefully would be in the top of their class.
So, well, I suppose they could be twins, right? Representative Pulaski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are concerns in this bill with tuition and debt. Those systems will have tuition increases, which automatically increase student debt. But there are some other interesting things in the bill. There are mandates in the bill. Some of the mandates we created, there are questionable items here about student fees and how those student fees would play out at the campus level if the language remains intact in the bill the way it is. There are also some interesting twists on the Minnesota State side. What's funded in the bill for their technology, instead of 25 and 25, which they requested, and then they would take $25 million, I'm talking $25 million from the campuses, there's 5 and 5 in here. I requested information from the system to say, well, if you only get 5 and 5, where does the other 45 come from? And I'm afraid of the answer to that one. So there has to be a clarification that if they're going to move on that technology upgrade, even with 5 and 5, then it comes out of the campuses for the entire amount. Those are concerns that as Representative Norris moves forward, we're going to have clarification.
Mr. Chair, if I can just address that, it's my understanding that that upgrade would not be done in that short period of time. This would be phased in over a number of years. So this is just the first phase, and if I'm wrong, I'll have somebody correct me. But I think this is phase one, and I agree. I do not want the campuses, if there's some way to avoid them having to kick in money. You know, if we can convert this into a HEPA project, then that would probably even be better. But
Mr. Chair, I agree with Representative Norris. We're told it's phased. I'm used to having what these systems call phased.
because they think that they can do these budgets episodically, and the next legislature isn't going to remember what they promised, so therefore it's a permanent adjustment and the campuses get to eat it for the duration of whatever this so-called phase is. So if it's going to happen, then there has to be clarification that this isn't going to be a phase adjustment permanently on those campuses to the $245 million. That's my problem with how they do their budgeting. They think we have an attention deficit for a two-year session. Some of our memories go a little bit beyond that.
Other discussion of the bill? Representative Norris, other closing comments?
Well, I really apologize for not living up to my abbreviated hope here, but I hope it's been helpful. I think this is a good bill. I really think that if we had more money, it'd be a better bill. But we're doing with what we have, and I hope that you can all support it. We have a few more stops to make, so we'll see you there.
Okay, members, with that, I'll renew my motion that Senate File 2214 as amended be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Senate File 2214 as amended is referred to the General Register. And members, you will be so happy to know we don't have a meeting tomorrow. We'll make an announcement about our meeting. I believe we'll be meeting on Monday. I will post the schedule. Seeing no further discussion, we are adjourned.